Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Indira Lakshmanan. It's day four of the GOP convention in Cleveland, and today's theme, an echo of the candidate's mantra, is Make America One Again. Tonight, Donald Trump will make his debut as the official Republican nominee. He's taken the votes, but it's not clear everyone there is as taken with his ideas. Last night, when vice presidential nominee Mike Pence was supposed to be the highlight, Senator Ted Cruz stole the show by refusing very publicly to endorse Donald Trump in his speech.
If you love our country and love your children as much as I know that you do, stand and speak and vote your conscience. Vote for candidates up and down the ticket who you trust to defend our freedom and to be faithful to the Constitution.
Cruz was booed off the stage by Trump supporters, and this morning, in a speech to the Texas delegation, he doubled down on his remarks, saying the promise candidates made to support the eventual nominee wasn't unconditional.
That pledge was not a blanket commitment that if you go and slander and attack Heidi, that I'm going to nonetheless come like a servile puppy dog and say thank you very much for maligning my wife and maligning my father.
Joining us now from the convention in Cleveland is WBUR's senior political reporter, Anthony Brooks. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, Indira. How you doing?
Great. So, Anthony, you were inside the hall last night during this extraordinary drama of the second most popular Republican candidate withholding support for the winner. What was it like?
Indira, this was extraordinary. This is the third convention that I've covered. I've watched a lot of them over the years, and you just can't expect something to go off the rails like this the way it did last night. I mean, of course, this was the big question all day. Was Ted Cruz going to endorse Trump or was he not? But I don't think anybody quite expected it to go down this way. And that great cut of tape you played right at the beginning where Cruz says, vote your conscience, the boos erupted. And I just happened to be very close to the sort of Trump family box in the VIP sitting area.
Lucky
and suddenly,
you.
I didn't expect it. And suddenly, there's all this commotion, and I thought there's a protest and they're hustling someone out. But no, suddenly I'm standing right under Donald Trump, big grin on his face, flashing the thumbs up. The stage goes dark. Ted Cruz leaves. And
wow.
There you have it. I mean, it was really, really, really something.
High drama. And especially because Donald Trump actually tweeted during Ted Cruz's speech that, oh, I saw this speech 2 hours ago, but I let him do it anyway. He broke his pledge, you know, bad. But then when he came out in the moment you saw him, he actually was giving the thumbs up as Ted Cruz finished speaking. It was almost like he was saying, yeah, whatever. He can say what he wants. I'm still the winner.
Well, it's true, and you have to wonder, too. He knew Ted Cruz wasn't going to endorse him. We all saw the advance of that speech at about 9 p.m. You have to wonder if, in Trump's sort of crazy way of thinking about these things, that this was a sense of drama that he almost welcomed. I mean, I don't know how else to think about it.
Well, it also makes him look, in a way, like the bigger guy, right? He's willing to let the loser have his moment in the spotlight, but at the same time, he's saying, guess what, guys, I won. It seems very kind of Game of Thrones, but without the beheading.
Well, it's true. On the other hand, once again, we're all talking about something that just careered so dramatically off script. And, you know, when at a time when the Republican Party needs to be uniting around Donald Trump, it was just evidence of this division with the party. You and I talked about this yesterday, how Ted Cruz represents the sort of right wing of this fractured party, and boy, did he make that clear last night. And it means Donald Trump's got his work cut out for him tonight.
Yeah, well, it also leaves Cruz in a bit of a question mark position. By all accounts, he wants to run again in 2020. But, you know, Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, wasn't so pleased with him, right?
Right. No, Chris Christie really let him have it. And why don't we listen to a little bit about that, and then I can talk about a little more of the fallout today. Here's Chris Christie.
It was an awful, selfish speech by someone who tonight, through the words he said on that stage, showed everybody why he has richly earned the reputation that he has on Capitol Hill.
Now, Indira, that reputation on Capitol Hill is probably among the most least popular senators. But, you know, Ted Cruz then appeared this morning at a Texas delegate breakfast. And keep in mind, these are people who, most of whom voted for Ted Cruz, and they were furious with him. And you played a little bit of that tape at the top. And, you know, Cruz said, look, this isn't a team sport. We don't just put on red jerseys or blue jerseys and say yay. I mean, it's really something. So one really wonders where this leaves Ted Cruz.
So you know, you're saying that even Ted Cruz's own supporters weren't happy with him.
No, they were furious at the overall. They were furious at this breakfast. Because look, they're furious because even though at one point they were supporting Ted Cruz, they don't want to elect Hillary Clinton. A lot of people really feel like, you know, if Hillary Clinton ends up winning the presidency by 1 or 2 points. You know, their point is Ted Cruz could have delivered those 1 or 2 points rather than just looking out for Ted Cruz. On the other hand, if Hillary Clinton ends up Trump, you know, really beating Trump decisively, Ted Cruz could be the last guy standing and sort of say, well, you know, this is kind of what I was saying, folks.
That's right.
And it might sort of set him up well for 2012. We'll see. It's a fascinating political
moment.
Well,
given the
polling, high drama.
Given the polling that is showing Hillary Clinton is having a 70-some percent chance of winning, you know, it seems like Ted Cruz might be pretty smartly setting himself up for 2020 in that way. Well, Anthony, the vice presidential nominee Mike Pence, the governor of Indiana, tried to counter Cruz's speech with a very positive message about Trump, but I noticed that he got the biggest applause for his critique of Hillary Clinton.
People in both parties are restless for change, ready to break free of old patterns in Washington, and Democrats are about to anoint someone who represents everything this country is tired of. You know, Hillary Clinton wants a better title, and I would too if I was already America's Secretary of the Status Quo.
It's a pretty cute line. You got to give the guy credit, Secretary of the Status Quo. So how did the crowd react to Mike Pence overall?
Yeah, it was pretty positive. And, dear, I agree with you. I thought Pence did a pretty interesting job. You know, one of his first lines was, for those of you who don't know me, which is most of you, I mean, he was very self-deprecating. And another thing he said was, you know, Donald Trump can be a forceful and charismatic character. You know, that must be why he selected me for balance.
I like that because it's kind of the old tradition of making jokes in a political speech, but jokes at your own expense.
Absolutely. And what I heard from the delegates was, you know, very, very positive. They liked the idea that he sort of provides balance. One delegate said Pence offers an element of balance to Trump. He's calm. He's understated. He's a real conservative with Washington experience, real executive experience. So folks like that. But of course, there was real concern that, you know, instead of Pence being the big story last night, it was Ted Cruz.
It was Cruz. Well, there was another big story last night, which was the U.S. Secret Service is conducting an investigation into comments made by Republican New Hampshire State Representative Al Baldessaro, who said this on Wednesday on WRKO.
This whole thing disgusts me. Hillary Clinton should be put in the firing line and shot for treason.
Whoa. So he is not just a Republican delegate, but he's a surrogate for Donald Trump. But he's out there advocating that Hillary Clinton be shot. I mean, Baldessaro is part of the country's biggest state legislature. Listeners may not know, but 424 New Hampshire representatives are paid $100 a year for their service. Tell us what you know about Baldessaro.
Yeah, well, this is a really sort of shocking comment, and depending on who you talk to, you get a lot of different response. But here's what we know about Baldessaro. As you said, he's a state representative. He was a regular fixture at all Donald Trump rallies in New Hampshire leading up to the primary. I saw a lot of them. Trump always singled him out as a great guy. He's standing up for the veterans, a real ally of Donald Trump's. Now, that said, the Trump campaign has made the point this week that Baldessaro does not speak for the Trump campaign. But these comments were really something, and a lot of people have approached him here on Media Row in Cleveland, and he's doubled down on those comments and hasn't backed away from them and said, yeah, she should face a firing squad because she committed treason. This is all about the emails and all about the Benghazi scandal. You know, the Democrats are saying that this is an example of what happens when Trump sort of ratchets up this kind of unfiltered, aggressive political speech.
And riles up a base to say things like threatening the life of a presidential candidate that just, that doesn't really seem like it's on. All right. Well, tonight, briefly, we're expecting speeches by Silicon Valley venture capitalist Peter Thiel, Ivanka Trump, the first daughter of Donald Trump, and Donald Trump himself. So in the brief moments we have left, what are you expecting and what do tonight's speeches need to do that you haven't seen yet?
Okay, in terms of what I'm expecting, I've given up making those kinds of prognostications this week. You know, here's what I'll say. Donald Trump has to find a way to sort of emerge as being seen as in control of this convention, because right now, every day, the story has been about a floor fight. Melania Trump's allegations of copying speeches, and then, you know, the Ted Cruz drama. Donald Trump has to make a coherent argument about why Americans should choose him as commander in chief, rather than have us tomorrow talking about the next unexpected kind of drama to come out of Cleveland. So that's what we'll be watching for.
All right. We will be watching with you and waiting for the full report tomorrow. That's WBUR's senior political reporter, Anthony Brooks, sticking it out for us in Cleveland. Thanks so much, Anthony.
Always a pleasure, Indira. Thank you.
For one reaction to Ted Cruz's address last night, we spoke with John Civilella. He's a Republican delegate from Marco Rubio from Massachusetts and a senior fellow at the Pioneer Institute, a free market think tank in Boston. He's also a contributor to WBUR's opinion page, Cognoscenti. Welcome, John.
Thanks, Indira.
So Ted Cruz, who campaigned as a social conservative, who appealed to evangelicals, he laid bare some pretty deep divisions within the party last night. Not only did he decline to endorse Trump, but he called on Republicans to, quote, vote your conscience, which sounded to me like a veiled dig at Trump, who we all remember called Ted Cruz Lion Ted. So I'm wondering, do you think that that could hurt the party's chances in November with Republicans who are wavering still about Trump?
I think it could. I mean, that was the first reaction on the floor. It took a moment for people to digest what he had said, and then the floor really erupted. You know, it was absolutely bizarre scene.
Erupted in boos, you mean?
Yeah, booed and jeered and start chanting, you know, say his name, Trump's name.
Were you one of those people cheering and booing?
No, I was observing everything.
Well, let me ask you, because you've been critical of Trump for mocking people with disabilities, for calling a judge biased simply because he's Latino and proposing a ban on entering this country based on religion. But you've also criticized Republican leadership for failing to appeal to the same base that Trump attracted. So how much of Trump's success is really the fault of the GOP elite?
I think it's a symptom of those failings, in a sense. I think somebody was going to jump into that populist track. The fact that the GOP elite for quite a while had ignored a lot of those issues kind of left this vacuum for somebody to fill.
Well, many Republican leaders from Massachusetts are sitting out this convention, apparently, because of their opposition to Trump. Is that a cop-out in your view, or even a missed opportunity for people like Governor Charlie Baker?
I don't necessarily think it's a cop-out from his perspective. I think it's, you know, staying home and doing the work there. Where I think that might differ in a qualitative sense is for former presidential candidates.
It sounds like you mean Mitt Romney.
The whole crew, like the Bush family and McCain and Romney, it's not so much a criticism, it's really more like an observation. You know, it's an opportunity.
Well, what is the opportunity they're missing?
If you have a different view on how the party should be run, or if you have certain policies you think should be in effect, or, you know, if you think a candidate saying, you know, intemperate things or inappropriate things, come out and talk.
All right. Well, let me ask you. Trump did win a record number of Republican primary votes, 37 states, including Massachusetts, where he carried 50% of the Republican primary votes. So isn't it time now to support the candidate? I mean, isn't that what this convention is all about?
I think it's an ongoing debate, you know, in the convention. There is a group and a faction that absolutely kind of came around. There are still others who are not there.
What about you?
I'm not there yet. I'm just not there. Some of the statements and things that he has said in the past, I find difficult to get over. And I haven't necessarily seen anything out here in that regard to kind of get me personally over those hurdles yet.
So fair enough. Do you think that means that you would stay home in November, or would you vote for Hillary?
I would not vote for Hillary Clinton. I would always vote. don't know whether you have to consider standing at the top of the ticket or not. But that's a possibility.
Is there anything that Trump could say tonight that would change your mind?
I don't know. But what I would be looking for are, like, really significant and strong messages of unity, not just in the party, but across the country as well.
John Civilella is a delegate for Marco Rubio and a political science professor at Columbia University. He's also a contributor to WBUR's opinion page, Cognoscenti. You can find links to his writing on our website, radioboston.org. Thanks so much for joining us, John.
Thank you, Indira.
I want to turn now to another Massachusetts delegate, Vincent DeVito. This is his fourth convention, and he's an ardent Trump supporter. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to speak with you.
Absolutely. So, Vincent, I want you to respond to some of what John Civilella just said. But first, what did you think of Ted Cruz's speech? Was it wrong of him to expose remaining fractures within the party?
There really aren't remaining fractures within the party. Senator Cruz's speech was one of the least impactful convention speeches that I've ever witnessed.
Because you think that he has such a small minority of people behind him?
He definitely has a small minority of people behind him. Besides that, the speech yesterday was political suicide. Donald Trump invited every one of the contenders to speak at the convention. He accepted, and he chose to do what he wanted to do, what he thought was in his best interest. It was impolite, and it did not resonate with the Republican Party. It did not resonate at all with any of the conventioners.
So it came off as kind of sour grapes, in your view, to be invited by the winner and yet to refuse to come over to his camp.
Yes, you nailed it. You know, jealousy is a very destructive emotion, and last night was a casebook study of that.
All right. Well, you just heard one of your fellow delegates from Massachusetts say that he's not there yet in terms of supporting Trump because of painful or divisive rhetoric that Trump has used. Governor Charlie Baker has said he won't vote for Trump and he might even leave the top of the ballot blank in November. Are you worried about what this kind of disunity or these holdouts could do to the party's chances of winning in November?
No, absolutely not, because the fundamentals of this election are basically already settled political science. And there is not disunity coming out of this convention. There was unity coming into this convention. As you may know, I was on the Rules Committee. And we had a thorough and respectful discussion of all the issues on the Rules Committee. I had always known in advance of the Rules Committee that the Never Trump movement really never was. It was only a handful of folks. Comparative to the same position I had 4 years ago, there was no passion behind the Never Trump movement like there was behind the Ron Paul supporters in Tampa. And as a result, the voting on the Rules Committee was lopsided in the favor of Trump and the RNC. In fact, RNC and Trump formally merged and unified in advance of the Rules Committee meeting, and it's been a celebratory and energetic and electrifying convention from the beginning.
Well, let me ask you, let me interrupt you for a second, because
sure.
your fellow delegate, John Civilella, who supported Marco Rubio, his position is that if the party wants to grow and not just be the sort of less than half of America that it is demographically now by the numbers, that particularly because of the changing face of America, the fact that there are more minorities than ever before, that someone like Marco Rubio, a sort of young, Latino, diverse face, is necessary. Given that Trump has alienated a lot of Latinos and a lot of black voters, how does he make the Republican Party of the future a big tent?
I don't know if that premise is accurate. I haven't seen polling that would reflect such a thing. I'll say this, that as I think the world knows now, Donald Trump has received more votes than any candidate that's running for the Republican nomination in history. He is expanding the electorate. He's outperforming every metric of John McCain and Mitt Romney across the board. Hillary Clinton is underperforming every metric of Barack Obama. The contest is between a grassroots candidate, Donald Trump, and the likely Democratic nominee, a grasstops candidate, Hillary Clinton. We are putting the movement candidate, the change candidate, out front, and the Democrats are likely going to put the establishment candidate. This is a contest between status quo and change. And Donald Trump is leading a movement, he'll tell you himself. And I've witnessed it. These folks are excited. This convention is, and it's, people are literally dancing in the aisles.
Wow, it sounds very, very exciting. So you make the point.
They are thrilled.
You make the point that Trump won a record number of Republican primary votes, 13 million nationwide, but more than 15 million other Republicans in the primaries chose either Ted Cruz, John Kasich, or Marco Rubio. So Trump got less than half of his party's support. What do you think he needs to say tonight? The theme is, you know, make America one again, unity. What does he need to say to get people to rally behind him tonight, quickly, in the short time we have left?
Yeah, quickly. Well, your premise is a half empty type of perspective. Really, he got that amount of votes with a huge field. Right? You're getting record amount of votes with a lot of people spread out across the board. But quickly, the party is unified. He will explain exactly how he is in touch with the American psyche and where American voters want the country to go next. Donald Trump is their messenger. He's their guy. He's going to win in November. He is uniquely in touch and has tapped into what the American voters want in the next president.
Vincent DeVito is a Trump delegate from Wellesley. Thank you so much for joining us from Cleveland.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Indira Lakshmanan, and this is Radio Boston.